less than a week ago. I would have come to Jamar, but I heard that you were due here, so I waited.
I am glad. Who are these with you?
He indicated the creatures.
This, he said, pointing to the foremost, is Strike Leader Excalloc, back from fighting the Short Ones under the mountains on Midkemia.
The creature stepped forward and raised his right hand, very human-like, in salute, and in a high, piping voice said,
Hail, Kamatsu, Lord of the Shinzawe! Honors to your house!
The Lord of the Shinzawe bowed slightly from the waist.
Greetings, Excalloc. Honors to your hive. The Choja are always welcome guests.
The creature stepped back and waited. The lord turned to look at the horse.
What is this upon which you sit, my son?
A horse, father. A creature the barbarians ride into battle. I've told you of them before. It is a truly marvelous creature. On its back I can run faster than the swiftest Choja runner.
How do you stay on?
The older Shinzawe's son laughed.
With great difficulty, I'm afraid. The barbarians have tricks to it I have yet to learn.
Hokanu smiled. Perhaps we can arrange for lessons. Kasumi slapped him playfully on the back.
I have asked several barbarians, but unfortunately they were all dead.
I have two here who are not. Kasumi looked past his brother and saw Lori, standing a full head taller than the other slaves who had gathered around.
So I see. Well, we must ask him. Father, with your permission, I will ride back to the house and have all made ready for your homecoming.
Komatsu embraced his son and agreed. The older son grabbed a handful of mane and with an athletic leap remounted. With a wave, he rode off. Pug and Lori quickly returned to their places on the wagon. Lori asked,
Have you seen the like of those things before?
Pug nodded.
Yes, the Serrani call them the Choja. They live in large hive mounds, like ants. The Serrani slaves I spoke with in the camp tell me they have been around as long as can be remembered. They are loyal to the Empire, though I seem to remember someone saying that each hive has its own queen.
Lori peered around the front of the wagon, hanging on with one hand.
I wouldn't like to face one on foot. Look at the way they run.
Pug said nothing. The older Shinzawe's son's remark about the short ones under the mountain brought back old memories.
If Thomas is alive, he thought, he is a man now. If he is alive.
The Shinzawe Manor was huge. It was easily the biggest single building, short of temples and palaces, that Pug had seen. It sat atop a hill, commanding a view of the countryside for miles. The house was square like the one in Jamar, but several times the size. The townhouse could easily have fit inside this one central garden. Behind it were the outbuildings, cookhouse, and slave quarters. Pug craned his neck to take in the garden, for they were walking quickly through, and there was little time to absorb all of it. The Hadonra, Septium, scolded him.
Don't tarry!
Pug quickened his step and fell in beside Lori. Still, on a brief viewing, the garden was impressive. Several shade trees had been planted beside three pools that sat in the midst of miniature trees and flowering plants. Stone benches had been placed for contemplative rest, and paths of fine pebble gravel wandered throughout. Around this tiny park the building rose, three stories tall. The top two stories had balconies, and several staircases rose to connect them. Servants could be seen hurrying along the upper levels, but there appeared to be no one else in the garden, or at least that portion they had crossed. They reached a sliding door, and Septium turned to face them. In stern tones he said,
You too, barbarians, will watch your manners before the lords of this house, or by the gods I'll have every inch of skin off your backs. Now make sure you do all that I've told you,
or you'll wish that Master Hokanu had left you to rot in the swamps."
He slid the door to one side and announced the slaves. The command for them to enter was given, and Septim shooed them inside. They found themselves in a colourfully lit room, the light coming through the large translucent door covered with a painting. On the walls hung carvings, tapestries, and paintings, all done in fine style, small and delicate. The floor was covered, in Sirani fashion, with a thick pile of cushions. Upon a large cushion, Komatsu, Lord of the Shinzawe, sat. Across from him were his two sons. All were dressed in the short robes of expensive fabric and cut they used when off duty. Pug and Laurie stood with their eyes downcast until they were spoken to. Hokanu spoke first.
"The blonde giant is called Lori, and the more normal-sized one is Poog."
Laurie started to open his mouth, but a quick elbow from Pug silenced him before he could speak. The older son noticed the exchange and said,
"You would speak."
Laurie looked up, then quickly down again. The instructions had been clear, not to speak until commanded to. Laurie wasn't sure the question was a command. The lord of the house said,
"Speak."
Laurie looked at Kasumi.
"I am Laurie, master. Laurie. And my friend is Pug, not Poog."
Hokanu looked taken aback at being corrected, but the older brother nodded and pronounced the name several times over until he spoke them correctly. He then said,
"Have you ridden horses?"
Both slaves nodded. Kasumi said,
"Good, then you can show me the best way."
Pug's gaze wandered as much as was possible with his head down, but something caught his eye. Next to the lord of the Shinzawe sat a game board and what looked like familiar figures. Komatsu noticed and said,
"You know this game?"
He reached over and brought the board forward so that it lay before him. Pug said,
"Master, I know the game. We call it chess."
Hokanu looked at his brother, who leaned forward.
"As several have said, father, there has been contact with the barbarians before."
His father waved away the comment.
"It is a theory."
To Pug, he said,
"Sit here and show me how the pieces move."
Pug sat and tried to remember what Colgan had taught him. He had been an indifferent student of the game, but knew a few basic openings. He moved a pawn forward and said,
"This piece may move forward only one space, except when it is first moved, master. Then it may move two."
The lord of the house nodded, motioning that he should continue.
"This piece is a knight and moves like so," said Pug.
After he had demonstrated the moves of the various pieces, the lord of the Shinzawe said,
"We call this game sure. The pieces are called by different names, but it is the same. Come, we will play."
Komatsu gave the white pieces to Pug. He opened with a conventional king's pawn move, and Komatsu countered. Pug played badly and was quickly beaten. The others watched the entire game without a sound. When it was over, the lord said,
"Do you play well among your people?"
"No, master, I play poorly."
He smiled, his eyes wrinkling at the edges.
"Then I would guess that your people are not as barbarous as is commonly held. We will play again soon."
He nodded to his older son, and Kasumi rose. Bowing to his father, he said to Pug and Laurie, "Come." They bowed to the lord of the house and followed Kasumi out of the room. He led them through the house to a smaller room with sleeping pallets and cushions.
"You will sleep here. My room is next door. I would have you at hand at all times."
Laurie spoke up boldly.
"What does the master want of us?"
Kasumi regarded him for a moment.
You barbarians will never make good slaves. You forget your place too often.
Lorry started to stammer an apology, but was cut off.
It is of little matter. You are to teach me things, Lorry. You will teach me to ride and how to speak your language. Both of you. I would learn what those...
He paused, then made a flat, nasal, wah-wah-wah sound.
Noises mean when you speak to each other.
Further conversation was cut off by the sound of a single chime that reverberated throughout the house. Kasumi said,
A Greek one comes. Stay in your rooms. I must go to welcome him with my father.
He hurried off, leaving the two Midkemians to sit in their new quarters, wondering at this newest twist in their lives. Twice during the following 2 days, Pug and Lorry glimpsed the Shinzawe's important visitor. He was much like the Shinzawe lord in appearance, but thinner, and he wore the black robe of a Surani Great One. Pug asked a few questions of the house staff and gained a little information. Pug and Lorry had seen nothing that compared with the awe in which the Great Ones were held by the Surani. They seemed a power apart, and with what little understanding of Surani's social reality Pug had, he couldn't exactly comprehend how they fit into the scheme of things. At first he had thought they were under some social stigma, for all he was ever told was that the Great Ones were outside the law. He then was made to understand, by an exasperated Surani slave who couldn't believe Pug's ignorance of important matters, that the Great Ones had little or no social constraints in exchange for some nameless service to the Empire. Pug had made a discovery during this time that lightened the alien feeling of his captivity somewhat. Behind the Nidra pens, he had found a kennel full of yapping, tail-wagging dogs. They were the only Midkemian-like animals he had seen on Kellywan, and he felt an unexplained joy at their presence. He had rushed back to their room to fetch Lorry and had brought him to the kennel. Now they sat in one of the runs amid a group of playful canines. Lorry laughed at their boisterous play. They were unlike the Duke's hunting hounds, being longer of leg and more gaunt. Their ears were pointed and perked at every sound.
I've seen their like before, in Gulby. It's a town in the great northern trade route of Kesh. They are called greyhounds, and are used to run down the fast cats and antelope of the grasslands near the Valley of the Sun.
The kennel master, a thin, droopy, eyelidded slave named Rockmod, came over and watched them suspiciously.
What are you doing here?
Lorry regarded the dour man and playfully pulled the muzzle of a rambunctious puppy.
We haven't seen dogs since we left our homeland, Rockmud. Our master is busy with a great one, so we thought we would visit your fine kennel.
At mention of his fine kennel, the gloomy countenance brightened considerably.
I try to keep the dogs healthy. We must keep them locked up, for they try to harry the Chojar, who like them not at all.
For a moment, Pug thought perhaps they had been taken from Midkemia as the horse had been. When he asked where they had come from, Rockmod looked at him as if he were crazy.
You speak like you have been too long in the sun. There have always been dogs.
With that final pronouncement on the matter, he judged the conversation closed and left. Later that night, Pug awoke to find Lorry entering their room.
Where have you been? Shh! You want to wake the whole household? Go back to sleep. Where did you go?
Pug asked in hushed tones. Lorry could be seen grinning in the dim light.
I paid a visit to a certain cook's assistant for... a chat.
Oh, Amarella?
Yes, came the cheerful reply. She's quite a girl.
The young slave who served in the kitchen had been making big eyes at Lorry
ever since the caravan had arrived 4 days ago. After a moment of silence, Lorry said,
You should cultivate a few friends yourself. Gives a whole new look to things.
I'll bet, Pug said, disapproval mixed with more than a little envy. Almarella was a bright and cheerful girl, near Pug's age, with merry dark eyes.
That little Katala now, she has her eye on you, I'm thinking.
Cheeks burning, Pug threw a cushion at his friend.
Oh, shut up and go to sleep.
Lorry stifled a laugh. He retired to his pallet and left Pug alone in thought. There was the faint promise of rain on the wind, and Pug welcomed the coolness he felt in its touch. Lorry was sitting astride Kasumi's horse, and the young officer stood by and watched. Lorry had directed Surani craftsmen as they fashioned a saddle and bridle for the mount, and was now demonstrating their use.
This horse is combat trained, Lorry shouted. He can be neck reined,
he demonstrated by laying the reins on one side of the horse's neck, then the other.
Or he can be turned by using your legs.
He raised his hands and showed the older son of the house how this was done. For 3 weeks they had been instructing the young noble in riding, and he had shown natural ability. Lorry jumped from the horse, and Kasumi took his place. The Sirani rode roughly at first, the saddle feeling strange under him. As he bounced by, Pug called out,
Master, grip him firmly with your lower leg.
The horse sensed the pressure and picked up a quick trot. Rather than be troubled by the increase in speed, Kasumi looked enraptured.
Keep your heels down, shouted Pug.
Then, without instructions from either slave, Kasumi kicked the horse hard in the sides and had the animal running over the fields. Lorry watched him vanish across the meadow and said,
He's either a natural horseman or he's going to kill himself.
Pug nodded. I think he's got the knack. He's certainly not lacking courage. Lorry pulled up a long stem of grass from the ground and put it between his teeth. He hunkered down and scratched the ear of a bitch who lay at his feet, as much to distract the dog from running after the horse as to play with her. She rolled over on her back and playfully chewed his hand. Lorry turned his attention to Pug.
I wonder what game our young friend is playing at.
Pug shrugged. What do you mean?
Remember when we first arrived? I heard Kasumi was about to head out with his Choja companions. Well, those three Choja soldiers left this morning, which is why Bethel here is out of her pen, and I heard some gossip that the orders of the oldest son of the Shinzawe were suddenly changed. Put that together with these riding and language lessons, and what do you have?
Pug stretched.
I don't know. I don't know either.
Lorry sounded disgusted.
But these matters are of high import.
He looked across the plain and said lightly,
All I ever wanted to do was to travel and tell my stories, sing my songs, and someday find a widow who owned an inn.
Pug laughed.
I think you would find tavern keeping dull business after all this fine adventure. Some fine adventuring. I'm riding along with a bunch of provincial militia and run right smack into the entire Surani army. Since then I've been beaten several times, spent over 4 months mucking about in the swamps, walked over half this world,
ridden in a wagon, as I remember.
Well, travelled over half this world, and now I'm giving riding lessons to Kasumi Shinzawe, older son of a lord of Suranuani. Not the stuff great ballads are made of.
Pug smiled ruefully.
You could have been 4 years in the swamps. Consider yourself lucky. At least you can count on being here tomorrow. At least as long as Septium doesn't catch you creeping around the kitchen late at night.
Laurie studied Pug closely. I know you're joking. About Septium, I mean. It has occurred to me several times to ask you, Pug, why do you never speak of your life before you were captured?
Pug looked away absently. I guess it's a habit I've picked up in the swamp camp. It doesn't pay to remind yourself of what you used to be. I've seen brave men die because they couldn't forget they were born free.
Laurie pulled at the dog's ear.
But things are different here.
Are they? Remember what you said back in Jamar about a man wanting something from you?
I think the more comfortable you become here, the easier it is for them to get whatever it is they want from you. This Shinzawe lord is no one's fool.
Seemingly shifting topics, he said, is it better to train a dog or horse with a whip or with kindness?
Laurie looked up.
What?
Why, with kindness. But you have to use discipline also.
Pug nodded.
We are being shown the same consideration as Bethel and her kind, I think. But we still are slaves. Never forget that.
Laurie looked out over the field for a long time and said nothing. The pair were rousted from their thoughts by the shouts of the older son of the house as he rode back into view. He pulled the horse up before them and jumped down.
He flies, he said in his broken king's tongue. Kasumi was an apt student and was picking up the language quickly. He supplemented his language lessons with a constant stream of questions about the lands and people of Midkemia. There was not a single aspect of life in the kingdom that he seemed uninterested in. He had asked for examples of the most mundane things, such as the manner in which one bargains with tradespeople, and the proper forms of address when speaking to people of different ranks. Kasumi led the horse back to the shed that had been built for him, and Pug watched for any sign of footsoreness. They had fashioned shoes for him from wood treated with resin, by trial and error, but these seemed to be holding up well enough. As he walked, Kasumi said, I have been thinking about a thing. I don't understand how your king rules, with all you have said about this Congress of Lords. Please explain this thing.
Laurie looked at Pug with an eyebrow raised.
While no more an authority on kingdom politics than Laurie, he seemed better able to explain what he knew.
Pug said, The Congress elects the king, though it is mostly a matter of form.
Form?
A tradition. The heir to the throne is always elected, except when there is no clear successor. It is considered the best way to stem civil war, for the ruling of the Congress is final. He explained how the Prince of Krondor had deferred to his nephew, and how the Congress had acquiesced to his wishes.
How is it with the Empire?
Kasumi thought, then said,
Perhaps not so different. Each emperor is the elect of the gods, but from what you have told me, he is unlike your king. He rules in the holy city, but his leadership is spiritual. He protects us from the wrath of the gods.
Laurie asked, Who then rules? They reached the shed, and Kasumi took the saddle and bridle off the horse and began rubbing him down.
Here it is different from your land.
He seemed to have difficulty with the language and shifted into Surani.
A ruling lord of a family is the absolute authority upon his estate. Each family belongs to a clan, and the most influential lord in the clan is war chief. Within that clan, each other lord of a family holds certain powers depending upon influence. The Shinzawe belong to the Kanazawe clan. We are the second most powerful family in that clan next to the Kida. My father in his youth was commander of the clan armies, a war chief, what you would call a general. The position of families shifts from generation to generation, so that it is unlikely I will reach so exalted a position. The leading lords of each clan sit in the High Council,
They advise the warlord. He rules in the name of the emperor, though the emperor could overrule him.
Does the emperor, in fact, ever overrule the warlord?
Asked Laurie. Never.
How is the warlord chosen? Asked Pug.
It is difficult to explain. When the old warlord dies, the clans meet. It is a large gathering of lords, for not only the council comes, but also the heads of every family. They meet and plot, and sometimes blood feuds develop. But in the end, a new warlord is elected.
Pug brushed back the hair from his eyes.
Then what is to keep the warlord's clan from claiming the office, if they are the most powerful?
Kasumi looked troubled.
It is not an easy thing to explain. Perhaps you would have to be Surani to understand. There are laws, but more important, there are customs. No matter how powerful a clan becomes, or a family within it, only the lord of one of five families may be elected warlord. They are the Kida, Ton Magu, Min Wanabi, Oaxaca Toucan, and the Zacatecas. So there are only five lords who may be considered. This warlord is an Oaxaca Toucan, so the light of the Kanazawe clan burns dimly. His clan, the Omecan, is in ascension now. Only the Min Wanabi rival them, and for the present they are allied in the war effort. That is the way of it.
Laurie shook his head.
This family and clan business makes our own politics seem simple.
Kasumi laughed.
That is not politics. Politics is the province of the parties.
Parties? Asked Laurie, obviously getting lost in the conversation.
There are many parties. The Blue Wheel, the Golden Flower, the Jade Eye, the Party for Progress, the War Party, and others. Families may belong to different parties, each trying to further their own needs. Sometimes families from the same clan will belong to different parties. Sometimes they switch alliances to suit their needs for the moment. Other times they may support two parties at once, or none.
It seems a most unstable government, remarked Laurie.
Kasumi laughed. It has lasted for over 2,000 years. We have an old saying, in the High Council there is no brother. Remember that, and you may understand.
Pug weighed his next question carefully.
Master, in all this you have not mentioned the Great Ones. Why is that?
Kasumi stopped rubbing down the horse and looked at Pug for a moment, then resumed his ministrations.
They have nothing to do with politics. They are outside the law and have no clan.
He paused again.
Why do you ask?
It is only that they seem to command a great amount of respect, and since one has called here so recently, I thought you could enlighten me.
They are given respect because the fate of the empire is at all times in their hands. It is a grave responsibility. They renounce all their ties, and few have personal lives beyond their community of magicians. Those with families live apart, and their children are sent to live with their former families when they come of age. It is a difficult thing. They make many sacrifices.
Pug watched Kasumi closely. He seemed somehow troubled by what he was saying.
The Great One who came to see my father was, when a boy, a member of this family. He was my uncle. It is difficult for us now, for he must observe the formalities and cannot claim kinship.
It would be better if he stayed away, I think.
The last was spoken softly.
Why is that, Master?
Laurie asked, in hushed tones.
Because it is hard for Hokonu. Before he became my brother, he was that Great One's son.
They finished caring for the horse and left the shack.
Bethel ran ahead, for she knew it was close to feeding time. As they passed the kennel, Rockmod called her over, and she joined the other dogs. The entire way there was no conversation, and Kasumi entered his room with no further remark for either of the Midkemians. Pug sat on his pallet, waiting for the call for dinner, and thought about what he had learned. For all their strange ways, the Serrani were much like other men. He found this somehow both comforting and troublesome. 2 weeks later, Pug was faced with another problem to mull over. Katala had been making it obvious she was less than pleased with Pug's lack of attention. In little ways at first, then with more blatant signs, she had tried to spark his interest. Finally, things had come to a head when he had run into her behind the cook shed earlier that afternoon. Laurie and Kasumi were trying to build a small lute with the aid of a Shinzawe woodcrafter. Kasumi had expressed interest in the music of the troubadour and, the last few days, had watched closely while Laurie argued with the artisan over the selection of proper grains, the way to cut the wood, and the manner of fashioning the instrument. He was perplexed about whether or not Nidra gut would make suitable strings, and a thousand other details. Pug had found all this less than engrossing, and after a few days had found every excuse to wander off. The smell of curing wood reminded him too much of cutting trees in the swamp for him to enjoy being around the resin pots in the woodcarver's shed. This afternoon he had been lying in the shade of the cook shed when Katala came around the corner. His stomach constricted at the sight of her. He thought her very attractive, but each time he had tried to speak to her, he found he couldn't think of anything to say. He would simply make a few inane remarks, become embarrassed, then hurry off. Lately he had taken to saying nothing. As she had approached this afternoon, he had smiled non-committally, and she started to walk past. Suddenly she had turned and looked as if near to tears. "What is the matter with me? Am I so ugly that you can't stand the sight of me?" Pug had sat speechless, his mouth open. She had stood for a moment, then kicked him in the leg. "Stupid barbarian!" she had sniffed, then run off. Now he sat in his room, feeling confused and uneasy over this afternoon's encounter. Laurie was carving pegs for his lute. Finally, he put knife and wood aside and said, "What's troubling you, Pug? You look as if they're promoting you to slave master and sending you back to the swamp." Pug lay back on his pallet, staring at the ceiling. "It's Katala." "Oh?" Laurie said.
"What do you mean, oh?"
"Nothing, except that Almirella tells me the girl has been impossible for the last 2 weeks, and you look about as bright as a poleaxed steer these days. What's the matter?"
"I don't know. She kicked me today."
Laurie threw back his head and laughed.
"Why in the name of heaven did she do that?"
"I don't know. She just kicked me."
"What did you do?"
"I didn't do anything."
"Ha!"
Laurie exploded with mirth.
"That's the trouble, Pug. There is only one thing I know of that a woman hates more than a man she doesn't like paying her too much attention, and that's lack of attention from a man she does like."
Pug looked despondent. "I thought it was something like that." Surprise registered on Laurie's face.
"What is it? Don't you like her?"
Leaning forward, his elbows on his knees, Pug said,
"It's not that. I like her. She's very pretty and seems nice enough. It's just that..."
"What?" Pug glanced sharply over at his friend to see if he was being mocked. Laurie was smiling, but in a friendly, reassuring way. Pug continued,
"It's just... there's someone else."
Laurie's mouth fell open, then snapped shut.
"Who?"
Except for Almirella, Katala's the prettiest wench I've seen on this god's forsaken world. He sighed.
In honesty, she's prettier than Almirella, though only a little.
Besides, I've not seen you ever speak to another woman, and I'd have noticed you skulking off with anyone.
Pug shook his head and looked down.
No, Laurie. I mean back home.
Laurie's mouth popped open again. Then he fell over backward and groaned.
Back home? What am I to do with this child? He's bereft of all wit.
He pulled himself up on an elbow and said,
Can this be Pug speaking? The lad who counsels me to put the past behind? The one who insists that dwelling on how things were at home leads only to a quick death?
Pug ignored the sting of the questions.
This is different. How is it different? By Ruthia, who in her more tender moments protects fools, drunks, and minstrels, how can you tell me this is different? Do you imagine for a moment you have one hope in 10 times 10,000 of ever seeing this girl again, whoever she is? I know, but thinking of Carlene has kept me from losing my mind more times.
He sighed loudly.
We all need one dream, Laurie.
Laurie studied his young friend for a quiet moment.
Yes, Pug, we all need one dream.
Still, he added brightly, a dream is one thing. A living, breathing, warm woman is another.
Seeing Pug become irritated at the remark, he switched topics.
Who is Carlene, Pug?
My Lord Boric's daughter. Laurie's eyes grew round.
Princess Carlene?
Pug nodded. Laurie's voice showed amusement.
The most eligible noble daughter in the Western realm, after the daughter of the Prince of Krondor? There are sides to you I never would have thought possible. Tell me about her.
Pug began to speak slowly at first, telling of his boyhood infatuation for her, then of how their relationship developed. Laurie remained silent, putting aside questions, letting Pug relieve himself of the pent-up emotions of years. Finally, Pug said,
Perhaps that's what bothers me so much about Katala. In certain ways, Katala's like Carlene. They've both got strong wills and make their moods known.
Laurie nodded, not saying anything. Pug lapsed into silence, then after a moment said,
When I was at Crydy, I thought for a time I was in love with Carlene. But I don't know. Is that strange?
Laurie shook his head.
No, Pug, there are many ways to love someone. Sometimes we want love so much we're not too choosy about who we love. Other times we make love such a pure and noble thing, no poor human can ever meet our vision. But for the most part, love is a recognition, an opportunity to say, there is something about you I cherish. It doesn't entail marriage or even physical love. There's love of parents, love of city or nation, love of life, and love of people, all different. All love. But tell me, do you find your feelings for Katala much as they were for Carlene?
Pug shrugged and smiled.
No, they're not. Not quite the same.
With Carlene, I felt as if I had to keep her away, you know, at arm's length, sort of keeping control of what went on, I think. Laurie probed lightly.
And Katala?
Pug shrugged again.
I don't know. It's different. I don't feel as if I have to keep her under control. It's more as if there are things I want to tell her, but I don't know how.
Like the way I got all jammed up inside when she smiled at me the first time. I could talk to Carlene when she kept quiet and let me. Katala keeps quiet, but I don't know what to say. He paused a moment. Then made a sound that was half sigh, half groan.
Just thinking about Katala makes me hurt, Laurie.
Lorry lay back, a friendly chuckle escaping his lips.
Aye, it's well I've known that ache. And I must admit, your taste runs to interesting women. From what I can see, Katala's a prize. And the Princess Carleen.
A little snappishly, Pug said, I'll make a point of introducing you when we get back. Lorry ignored the tone.
I'll hold you to that. Look, all I mean is, it seems you've developed an excellent knack for finding worthwhile women.
A little sadly, he said,
I wish I could claim as much. My life has been mostly caught up with tavern wenches, farmers' daughters, and common street whores. I don't know what to tell you.
Lorry, said Pug. Lorry sat up and looked at his friend. I don't know what to do. Lorry studied Pug a moment. Then comprehension dawned and he threw back his head, laughing. He could see Pug's anger rising and put his hands up in supplication.
I'm sorry, Pug. I didn't mean to embarrass you. It was just not what I expected to hear.
Somewhat placated, Pug said, I was young when I was captured, less than 16 years of age. I was never of a size like the other boys, so the girls didn't pay much attention to me, until Carleen, I mean, and after I became a squire, they were afraid to talk to me. After that...
Damn it all, Lorry! I've been in the swamps for 4 years. What chance have I had to know a woman?
Lorry sat quietly for a moment, and the tension left the room.
Pug, I never would have imagined. But, as you said, when have you had the time?
Lorry, what am I to do?
What would you like to do?
Lorry looked at Pug, his expression showing concern. I would like to go to her, I think. I don't know. Lorry rubbed his chin.
Look, Pug, I never thought I'd have this sort of talk with anyone besides a son someday, if I ever have one. I wasn't meaning to make sport of you. You just caught me off guard.
He looked away, gathering his thoughts, then said,
My father threw me out when I was just shy 12 years old. I was the oldest boy, and he had 7 other mouths to feed, and I was never much for farming. A neighbour boy and I walked to Tirsog and spent a year living on the streets. He joined a mercenary band as a cook's monkey and later became a soldier. I hooked up with a travelling troupe of musicians. I apprenticed to a jongler from whom I learned the songs, sagas and ballads, and I travelled. I came quickly to my growth, a man at 13. There was a woman in the troupe, a widow of a singer, travelling with her brothers and cousins. She was just past 20, but seemed very old to me then. She was the one who introduced me to the games of men and women.
He stopped for a moment, reliving memories long forgotten. Lorry smiled.
It was over 15 years ago, Pug, but I can still see her face. We were both a little lost. It was never a planned thing. It just happened one afternoon on the road. She was kind.
He looked at Pug.
She knew I was scared, despite my bravado.
He smiled and closed his eyes.
I can still see the sun in the trees behind her face, and the smell of her mingled with the scent of wildflowers.
Opening his eyes, he said,
We spent the next 2 years together while I learned to sing.
Then I left the troupe.
What happened?
Pug asked, for this was a new story to him. Lorry had never spoken of his youth before.
She married again. He was a good man, an innkeeper on the road from Malloch's Cross to Derony's Vale. His wife had died the year before of fever, leaving him with 2 small sons. She tried to explain things to me, but I wouldn't listen. What did I know? I was not quite 16, and the world was a simple place.
Pug nodded. I know what you mean. Lorry said. Look, what I'm trying to say is that I understand the problem. I can explain how things work.
Pug said.
I know that. I wasn't raised by monks.
But you don't know how things work.
Pug nodded as they both laughed.
I think you should just go to the girl and make your feelings known, said Lorry.
Just talk to her.
Of course. Love is like a lot of things. It is always best done with the head.
Save mindless efforts for mindless things.
Now go. Now?
Pug looked panic-stricken.
You can't start any sooner, right?
Pug nodded and, without a word, left. He walked down the dark and quiet corridors, outside to the slave quarters, and found his way to her door. He raised his hand to knock on the door frame, then stopped. He stood quietly for a moment, trying to make up his mind what to do, when the door slid open. Almirella stood in the doorway, clutching her robe about her, her hair disheveled.
Oh, she whispered. I thought it was Lorry.
Wait a moment. She disappeared into the room, then shortly reappeared with a bundle of things in her arms. She patted Pug's arm and set off in the direction of his and Lorry's room. Pug stood at the door, then slowly entered. He could see Katala lying under a blanket on her pallet. He stepped over to where she lay and squatted next to her. He touched her shoulder and softly spoke her name. She came awake and sat up suddenly, gathered her blanket around her, and said,
What are you doing here?
I wanted to talk to you. Once started, the words came out in a tumbling rush.
I am sorry if I've done anything to make you angry with me, or haven't done anything. I mean, Lorry said that if you don't do something when someone expects you to, that's as bad as paying too much attention. I'm not sure, you see.
She covered her mouth to hide a giggle, for she could see his distress in spite of the gloom.
What I mean is, I'm sorry. Sorry for what I've done. Or didn't do.
She silenced him by placing her fingertips across his mouth. Her arm snaked out and around his neck, pulling his head downward. She kissed him slowly, then said,
Silly. Go close the door.
They lay together, Katala's arm across Pug's chest, while he stared at the ceiling. She made sleepy sounds, and he ran his hands through her thick hair and across her soft shoulder.
What?
She asked sleepily.
I was just thinking that I haven't been happier since I was made a member of the Duke's court.
Skirt. She came a bit more awake.
What's a duke?
Pug thought for a moment. It's like a lord here, only different. My duke was cousin to the king, and the third most powerful man in the kingdom. She snuggled closer to him.
It must have been important to be part of the court of such a man.
Not really. I did him a service and was rewarded for it. He didn't think he wanted to bring up Carlene's name here. Somehow his boyhood fantasies about the princess seemed childish in light of this night. Katala rolled over onto her stomach. She raised her head and rested it on a hand, forming a triangle with her arm.
I wish things could be different.
How so, love?
My father was a farmer in Turil. We are among the last free people in Kellywan. If we could go there, you could take a position with the Cauldra, the Council of Warriors. They always have need for resourceful men. Then we could be together.
We're together here, aren't we? Katala kissed him lightly.
Yes, dear Pug, we are. But we both remember what it was to be free, don't we?
Pug sat up. I try to put that sort of thing out of my mind. She put her arms around him, holding him as she would a child.
It must have been terrible in the swamps. We hear stories, but no one knows, she said softly.
It is well that you don't. She kissed him, and soon they returned to that timeless, safe place shared by two, all thoughts of things terrible and alien forgotten. For the rest of the night they took pleasure in each other, discovering a depth of feeling new to each. Pug couldn't tell if she had known other men before, and didn't ask. It wasn't important to him. The only important thing was being there with her now. He was awash in a sea of new delights and emotions. He didn't understand his feelings entirely, but there was little doubt what he felt for Katala was more real, more compelling, than the worshipful, confused longings he had known when with Carleen. Weeks passed, and Pug found his life falling into a reassuring routine. He spent occasional evenings with the Lord of the Shinzawe playing chess, or shore, as it was called here, and their conversations gave Pug insights into the nature of Surani life. He could no longer think of these people as aliens, for he saw their daily life as similar to what he had known as a boy. There were surprising differences, such as the strict adherence to an honor code, but the similarities far outnumbered the differences. Katala became the centerpiece of his existence. They came together whenever they found time, sharing meals, a quick exchange of words, and every night that they could steal together. Pug was sure the other slaves in the household knew of their nighttime assignations, but the proximity of people in Surani life had bred a certain blindness to the personal habits of others, and no one cared a great deal about the comings and goings of two slaves. Several weeks after his first night with Katala, Pug found himself alone with Kasumi, as Lorry was embroiled in another shouting match with the woodcrafter who was finishing his loot. The man considered Lorry somewhat unreasonable in objecting to the instruments being finished in bright yellow paint with purple trim, and he saw absolutely no merit in leaving the natural wood tones exposed. Pug and Kasumi left the singer explaining to the woodcrafter the requirements of wood for proper resonance, seemingly intent on convincing by volume as much as by logic. They walked toward the stable area. Several more captured horses had been purchased by agents of the Lord of the Shinzawe and had been sent to his estate, at what Pug took to be a great deal of expense and some political maneuvering. Whenever alone with the slaves, Kasumi spoke the king's tongue and insisted they call him by name. He showed a quickness in learning the language that matched his quickness in learning to ride. "Friend Lorry," said the older son of the house, "will never make a proper slave from a Surani point of view. He has no appreciation of our arts." Pug listened to the argument that still could be heard coming from the woodcarver's building. "I think it more the case of his being concerned over the proper appreciation of his art." They reached the corral and watched as a spirited grey stallion reared and whinnied at their approach. The horse had been brought in a week ago, securely tied by several leads to a wagon, and had repeatedly tried to attack anyone who came close. "Why do you think this one is so troublesome, Pug?" Pug watched the magnificent animal run around the corral, herding the other horses away from the men. When the mares and another, less dominant stallion were safely away, the grey turned and watched the two men warily. "I'm not sure. Either he's simply a badly tempered animal, perhaps from mishandling, or he's a specially trained war horse. Most of our war mounts are trained not to shy in battle, to remain silent when held, to respond to their rider's command in times of stress. A few, mostly ridden by lords, are specially trained to obey only their master, and they are weapons as much as transport, being schooled to attack. He may be one of these." Kasumi watched him closely as he pawed the ground and tossed his head. "I shall ride him some day," he said. "In any event, he will sire a strong line. We now number 5 mares, and father has secured another 5. They will arrive in a few weeks, and we are scouring every estate in the empire to find more."
Kasumi got a far-off look and mused. When I was first upon your world, Pug, I hated the sight of horses. They rode down upon us, and our soldiers died.
But then I came to see what magnificent creatures they are.
There were other prisoners, when I was still back on your world, who said you have noble families who are known for nothing so much as the fine stock of horses they breed. Some day, the finest horses in the Empire shall be Shinzawe horses.
By the look of these, you have a good start, though from what little I know, I think you need a larger stock for breeding.
We shall have as many as it takes.
Kasumi, how can your leaders spare these captured animals from the war effort?
You must surely see the need to quickly build mounted units if you're going to advance your conquest.
Kasumi's face took on a rueful expression.
Our leaders, for the most part, are tradition-bound, Pug. They refuse to see any wisdom in training cavalry. They are fools. Your horsemen ride over our warriors, and yet they pretend we cannot learn anything, calling your people barbarians. I once sieged a castle in your homeland, and those who defend it taught me much about warcraft. Many would brand me traitor for saying such, but we have held our own only by force of numbers. For the most part, your generals have more skill. Trying to keep one's soldiers alive rather than sending them to their death teaches a certain craftiness. No, the truth of the matter is we are led by men who... He stopped, realizing he was speaking dangerously. The truth is, he said at last, we are as stiff-necked a people as you. He studied Pug's face for a moment, then smiled. We raided for horses during the first year, so that the warlord's great ones could study the beasts to see if they were intelligent allies, like our Choja, or merely animals. It was a fairly comical scene. The warlord insisted he be the first to try to ride a horse. I suspect he chose one much like this big grey, for no sooner did he approach the animal than the horse attacked, nearly killing him. His honour won't permit any other to ride when he failed, and I think he was fearful of trying again with another animal. Our warlord, Almicho, is a man of considerable pride and temper, even for a Surani.
Pug said, then how can your father continue to purchase captured horses? And how can you ride in defiance of his order?
Kasumi's smile broadened. My father is a man of considerable influence in the council. Our politics is strangely twisted, and there are ways to bend any command, even from the warlord or high council, and any order, save one from the light of heaven himself. But most of all, it is because these horses are here, and the warlord is not. He smiled. The warlord is supreme only in the field. Upon this estate, none may question my father's will.
Since coming to the estate of the Shinzawe, Pug had been troubled by whatever Kasumi and his father were plotting. That they were embroiled in some Surani political intrigue, he doubted not. But what it might prove to be, he had no idea. A powerful lord like Kamatsu would not spend this much effort satisfying a whim of even a son as favored as Kasumi.
Still, Pug knew better than to involve himself any more than he was involved by circumstance. He changed the topic of conversation.
Kasumi, I was wondering something.
Yes?
What is the law regarding the marriage of slaves?
Kasumi seemed unsurprised by the question. Slaves may marry with their master's permission, but permission is rarely given. Once married, a man and wife may not be separated, nor can children be sold away so long as the parents live. That is the law. Should a married couple live a long time, an estate could become burdened with 3 or 4 generations of slaves, many more than they could economically support. But occasionally permission is granted.
Why?
Do you wish Katala for your wife?
Pug looked surprised.
You know?
Without arrogance, Kasumi said, Nothing occurs upon my father's estates that he is ignorant of, and he confides in me. It is a great honor.
Pug nodded thoughtfully. I don't know yet. I feel much for her, but something holds me back. It's as if...
He shrugged, at a loss for words.
Kasumi regarded him closely for a time, then said, It is by my father's will you live, and by his whim how you live.
Kasumi stopped for a minute, and Pug became painfully aware of how large a gulf still stood between the two men, one the son of a powerful lord, and the other the lowest of his father's property, a slave. The false veneer of friendship was ripped away, and Pug again knew what he had learned in the swamp. Here life was cheap, and only this man's pleasure, or his father's, stood between Pug and destruction. As if reading Pug's mind, Kasumi said, Remember, Pug, the law is strict.